Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman. Tonight, I'm really excited to once again welcome Guy Finley back on the show. He is the best-selling author of The Secrets of Letting Go and Live in the Now, and over 35 other books and audio programs that have sold over millions of copies in 18 languages worldwide. He is the founder and director of a nonprofit, Life for Learning Foundation, a center for self-study located in Merlin, Oregon. And there is so many things that this man does. You have to go to his website, guyfinley.com. The information that is available free on there is amazing. You can also find more information on him on YouTube, which I found very uplifting and awesome information on YouTube. So without further ado, Guy Finley, thank you so much for being on air once again.
My pleasure, Jennifer. Honestly.
You claim to be, and you are, a self-realization author, meaning you help people find reality and truth and lead them in that direction. Is that an accurate way of describing what your focus is?
I don't think I've ever been asked that question before, Jennifer. I think that if I was going to answer a question like that, I wouldn't say that I show people the truth. What I do, I think, primarily is help people meet themselves. I think that whatever it is that's good and worthwhile in our lives, we discover eventually in our relationship with ourself and through other people, the things we do, what we love. All of this works little by little to work to help us discover the truth of ourselves. That's what I help people do, Jennifer, is discover the truth of themselves.
And you do a wonderful job. You have helped me considerably with your new book. But before you get to the book, which is The Secret of Letting Go, your first career was as a Motown songwriter. And
my first career was as a mariachi.
Ah! So you should come down to Tucson.
Yeah,
we live the past, but we let go of the past.
Yeah.
The reason why I have found music for me as being very inspirational and influential in my spirituality. And I just wanted to ask you, do you think it was a stepping stone to where you are now?
I don't think there's any doubt about it, actually. You don't, as a rule anyway, at the age of 17, 18 years old, you're not writing books on self-realization. You're exploring spirit as best you can, and that was the path for me, was through my music. The lyrics that I wrote from the time that we first signed with Motown all the way through my RCA days. If anyone ever took a magical mystery tour of my music, you would see that the sole interest that governed my writing and my exploration as a musician had to do with spirit. So I really do think that it was a great vehicle, not only to introduce me to certain emotional parts of myself, but to help my mind become clearer in ways to express in short, how do you say this? When you write a song, you've got about 3 minutes and 20 seconds to convey a very large idea. And that takes a certain kind of clarity. You get an emotional impulse, an impression, and then you have to figure out how to state that in words. And I think that was a very big part of my development, was my days as a songwriter.
Now, would you say music lyrics are, to me, they're poetry. And for me, I don't necessarily write music per se, but I do write a lot of poetry, and that's how I found a lot of what's going on with me is those moments of inspiration that literally I felt spirit was like going right through me, through my hand, through the pen, onto the paper. And it was exactly how I was feeling in that moment, but yet at the same time, it didn't feel like it was me writing. Do you have that experience when you were writing? That it almost was almost like another part of you coming out on the page?
There are certainly times when the muse strikes, you know, when there's great inspiration, some kind of grace that comes over a person. And that's a different kind of writing. And I think that writing, you know, whether we journal or we write poetry, I think all of these things are marvelous ways for an individual to work at aligning their heart and their mind. Because in the end, our spiritual work is about bringing all of these parts of ourselves into a kind of alignment so that this broader energy can move through us uninterrupted and we can be better, truer instruments of that higher life.
Most definitely. Which, did you feel when you were writing your music, you were, in a sense, letting go of that situation that you need to get rid of?
Or were you
more gaining more clarity towards spirit?
There was no, you couldn't say either or, Jennifer. When you're when you're under contract to a publishing company like we were at Motown and RCA, you know, people come and they say, will you write a song for Diana Ross, or will you write a song for the Four Seasons, or, you know, and then you're not, when you're writing like that, you're writing to express a creative urge that hopefully matches the need of other people. There are times when you're writing music or writing poetry, and everyone who does journaling knows this, where, as you said, you just suddenly have a great upwelling. There's an immense clarity, and you are able to express in words things that ordinarily you can't and that carry great meaning with them, not only while you write them, but when you revisit them. You can tell that something was very unique in the way the words were put together, the sound of the sentences, the tempo of what you've done. All of that is part of the way in which spirit can work through a human being.
Most definitely. And do you have a favorite song that you've written that you're most proud of, or that you really, really go, yeah, this is it?
Oh, wow. Well, nothing that anyone here that would be listening to us would know. But we had a minor hit record called White Bird, and I wrote a song called I Come to Rest in You that was recorded by completely blanked.
That's fine. It happens.
Billy Preston and Serena. That was a very popular song. And you know, these were beautiful songs because, by the way, these particular songs had very spiritual lyrics to them.
Right. Do you dabble in music still?
I do still have a piano. And I've been awfully busy writing books and recording audio albums, but I have a certain plan in the back of my head, just for the sake of the conversation, to go back and write another musical. I wrote a musical for Broadway that Universal Studios bought back in the, I guess it was in the late 80s, and we took it into development. And one day I intend to write a spiritual musical.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm sure it'll be awesome. Now, speaking of all your writing, you've done quite a bit. And the one we're speaking about today is The Secret of Letting Go. And I mentioned before we went on the air that it helped me. It was like Spirit said, this is the book for you to read. And I kind of had a battle, shall we say, with the false self this week. And as I'm reading this book, so it's like, okay, we can let that go. And it was very interesting. The timing of everything was just perfect. It was very helpful. Now, you originally wrote this back in the 90s and decided to redo it, correct?
That is correct. I first wrote The Secret of Letting Go. I think it first came out. The first version was in, edition was in 1990 or 91.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe a year or so ago, my publisher came and said, look, this book has been a perennial bestseller. Would you consider revamping it? Would you go back and revisit it, you know, touch it up, add new material, bring it into the 2000s? And I said, sure. And I did, and it became an Amazon number one book.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a book that I think is helpful for anyone wanting to understand where it is that they're standing in their own way and how to get out of it.
Definitely. It's definitely a timeless book, meaning you can use this anytime. And it's one of those books that you keep nearby, because if something comes up and you're not quite sure, you can find practical ways to get through that moment in this book. It definitely helps you get out of things more permanently if there's any difficulties. It woke me up to a lot of things that I was doing. I found it kind of amusing. So what took place for you to write this kind of book in the first place?
You know, I think there's two things, Jennifer, that human beings, men and women, you and I, there's two sort of primary roads that we take in life. One is what I'd call the road of attraction, mm-hmm. where I'm interested in these things. I want to learn about something. I want to dive into this and discover what I can. And in part, the reason that we have this attraction to these various things is because we have a sense that there is something that we will learn about ourselves by doing that, no matter what it is. Find a person that's fascinating, an art, a science, whatever it is. We move towards something in a wish to discover more about ourselves through whatever it is that has our interest. But there's something else that we do with our lives that, by and large, most of us don't realize is taking place. And that is, we spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to get away from or change the things in our life that we don't like. And so instead of a positive spin on it, meaning I'm drawn towards this particular discipline or work path or whatever it may be, we are also equally, if not so, always trying to figure out what to do with something that's troubling us. A lot of times a person thinks that they want to get a better education and they want to move towards something they think is better for them, but the truth is one of the reasons they're moving towards what they are is because they want to move away from something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't really separate this idea that I want something from what I no longer want to do or be. And everybody, I hope that this is understandable, is it? Can you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, this part of us that is always trying to move away from something by going towards something, one of the things that almost never dawns on us is that we can move towards this, get attracted to that, dive in, get some new relationship, new career, new home, move to a new city, whatever it is. But it isn't very long before we realize that, you know what, I still have this anger. I'm still afraid. I'm as nervous as I was in this city as I was in the city I just left. And that's what you asked me, why write a book? What's this book about? I wanted to understand not what it is, how should I say this? Instead of wanting something that would make me feel better about myself, Jennifer,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to understand what it is within me that wherever I go eventually makes me unhappy. I wanted to know why there was so much anger when things didn't go well. Not how to find a place where I didn't have anger,
mm-hmm.
but why, wherever I went, this anger went with me. So, basically, The Secret of Letting Go was my way to explore a life that I had not been able to explain to myself as to why there was so much anger and fear and pain in it. And most of us, as I said this, we really don't know how much pain there is in our lives, Jennifer. Because when we have pain, we do one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
We blame someone or something for it, or we imagine what we need to do to get away from that pain by which we'll find pleasure.
Right.
And neither of those things work. Blaming people, justifying the way we feel when we're negative by saying, you did this, or this isn't right, or what's wrong with them, or saying, you know what, I'm going to never be around another person like that again. I'm going to make $1 zillion, or I'm going to get a new group of friends. And if we're honest, we've all been moving through this life over and over and over again, finding only that we change not so much the anger or the fear, but really what we're frightened or angry about.
Mm-hmm.
And I got tired of that, Jennifer. I was tired of answers that didn't work. And that's why I wrote The Secret of Letting Go, because it was an honest exploration into a shocking discovery that what I really needed to let go of wasn't a person, a place, a thing, or a possession, but the part of me that was attached to persons, things, and possessions, and that felt threatened when they would change.
Right.
So the real work... And the heart of the secret of letting go is gradually recognizing that, listen, it's natural for me to, I get interested in something or someone, and by God, you know, you throw yourself into it, and you're overcome with wanting to excel or have love or whatever it is. But time and time again, there comes a moment where life says, okay, look, you can do one of two things here. You can either continue to fight to control the situation that's now starting to change, or you can realize by the fact that it's starting to change and that it's introducing you to this nervousness or this anxiety or this anger or this fear, that it's introducing you to these parts of yourselves. It's doing that because life is trying to teach you that you no longer need to be that person. You don't have to be the man who knows himself through the approval of someone else. You don't have to be the woman who thinks she's only as valuable as other people agree they are. Now, for a long time, as I said, this is all we know to do. But there does come a time when life starts to show us, without mistake, by our anger or fear or frustration in situations, that level of ourself and what that level of ourself brought to us through that situation, that's as far as it can go. We're done. And that's where letting go comes in. We begin to let go of not the thing or the person that has troubled us, but the nature that is clinging to something in the face of a change and doesn't want to have to discover a whole new order of itself.
Which isn't always easy to do. Now, when you finally get to the point that you know it's time to let go, it's time to move on, to let go of that part, sometimes the past just sneaks up on you a time again and again. So what do you do with that?
You just see that it's true. I mean, look, how many times, Jennifer, and everyone listening, how many times have you said to yourself, well, I learned that lesson.
Oh, too many times. And here it comes again.
And then it comes again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, there's several points here. Number one is that we are meant, as men and women spiritually, we are meant to discover a new order of ourselves really every moment. Every day, we are meant to become a new human being. You know, I'm working on some talks. I'm going over to the Omega Institute in a couple weeks over there in New York to present a 5-day intensive.
Yes.
And I was trying to think of an example, because, you know, what is it that troubles us in a given moment, Jennifer? You know, when something happens and we don't like it, why don't we like it when something happens that goes against our wishes? I mean, it sounds like a silly question, but I want to explore it. Why do I get upset over anything?
Because you don't have control of it, or it's something you need to learn from. Anything that irritates me is like, okay, I stop myself and say, what do I got to see here that I don't want to see?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Because really what we're saying is that an unwanted moment, by the fact of it, is due to the fact that we are strongly resisting something that has changed. Yes?
Yes.
So here comes a change of some kind, and I immediately have a negative reaction to it. And the negative reaction is my resistance to the change that has taken place. Now, why do I, in quotes, resist change? Why do any of us resist change?
You know, I've been asking my question all this week.
Because it threatens me. See, this is what we never see the truth of. The fact that something changed that I didn't want it to, and I'm resisting it, means that I don't want it to change. And the reason I don't want it to change is because my identity, who I think I am, what I think I have, who I take myself to be in my relationship with you, mm-hmm. my identity itself is threatened when a change takes place that I don't want. In fact, that's what an unwanted moment is something that threatens my sense of security. And you can't separate my sense of security from the identity I have, born of whatever it is that's lending me that security. Yes?
Yes, very true. Right. You can't do that.
Now, this becomes very interesting. Now, we can go through our lives, as most of us have, fighting with life when something comes along and changes what it is that we know ourselves through. You know, maybe you've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and they've always treated you with a certain deference, a certain kindness, or at work, certain people give you this respect, and then one day you go to work, and all of a sudden somebody's talking to you badly, or you mm-hmm. look over and your boyfriend or girlfriend, their eye is wandering. And in a moment like that, the ordinary reaction is, number one, to blame the person for having changed in some way, when the truth is the reason it's troubling me is because by what you've done, you are virtually taking something away from me through which I know myself and value myself. So, here's the point.
Mm-hmm.
How many times are we going to go through that, getting mad, trying to control people and circumstances, before we realize that maybe, just maybe, when a moment like that takes place, life is trying to say, hey, Guy, hey, Jennifer, who you were up until now has been okay. And who you are and what you've been up until now is someone that believed that you had to have that approval, or that people had to speak to you in certain tones, or that you had to own this particular house or live in this particular neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Then life says, okay, no, you can't. Things are changing. What if life is not trying to take something from us in a moment like that, but rather inviting us to see that who and what we have been up until this moment is no longer viable, valuable for us to be?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we know that's true? Because now we're suffering over the very thing that once upon a time was our sense of satisfaction.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm going through right now. I told you before, I'm seriously thinking of moving from Tucson, and it's just not satisfying here anymore, and I know it's time to move on. And I have no clue where I'm going, and I'm just being in the moment and see what happens. So I totally can relate to what you're saying about not being satisfied anymore, and this has been building for some time, and I have been resisting what was so evident in front of me. So it's very interesting to really, that's why I said this book was like perfect timing, because it really just kind of gelled everything that I've been saying to myself in written form to give me that really, the clue right in front of my face. So how can I ignore it?
Yeah.
I couldn't ignore it anymore.
We get these indications from life all the time. And maybe it's not just move, out of a city or a particular state, but
right.
maybe it's move away from that anger.
Right.
You know, maybe it's move away from that resentment that you've had for 20 years. Maybe it's move away from that rushing around that you always do. And that's the point. See, when we talk about letting go, what we are always talking about at its heart is letting go of who we think we are in any given moment where suddenly we are negative because something has changed. Mm-hmm. We believe that nothing is supposed to change unless we agree it changes and that it agrees that it changes in the direction I want it to. That isn't life.
Mm-mm.
Life is a very beautiful thing. Would you like to hear my definition of an authentically fearless life?
Please.
It's when you know that no matter what happens, no matter how things change, it's always for the good of you. When you know that nothing can change that doesn't bring with it something positive, powerful, uplifting, and transformative. When you know that whatever it is that happens serves who you really are, you are never again afraid of any change that takes place. That's what it means to be a fearless human being, and that's what letting go leads up to. Because gradually, we see enough times that what I have to let go of here isn't the fact that the thing didn't go the way I wanted it to. What I have to let go of is this order of myself that insists it go the way that I want it to go. That's always the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a return, bringing our attention back to ourselves and recognizing that this moment did not produce this pain in me. Instead, it revealed the pain that I brought with me into the moment. And that's a huge difference.
Oh, most definitely. So with just figuring out and having the pain revealed to you, what is the process then to let go of it without being totally stressed out and totally in anxiety? I mean, it's easy to say, just let it go. But
well, no, but it isn't. See, that this is what we are, Jennifer, as human beings, we're so used to living in our minds. Thinking, always thinking through what the next step is, thinking through how to attract something, thinking through how to get rid of something. We live from an identity that is completely born of the process of thought. Our true nature is not a thinking nature. Our true nature is a seeing nature. And when you see, for instance, the fact that when you are fighting with a moment, that it isn't the moment you're fighting with, but your demand upon the moment that hasn't been met by the moment. So we are always really in a fight with ourselves. We fight with our idea about how things are supposed to go. We don't really fight with what happened, because what happened has happened, it's gone on.
Right.
What we fight with is a picture that we have of how we're supposed to be or what the moment is supposed to be like, and then that same mind, when it runs into something that doesn't match up, doesn't measure up the way it wants to, then it will begin to fight with what it calls the moment, Jennifer. But it's mm-hmm. not fighting with the moment, it's fighting with its own idea. You know, this is an important idea. Have you ever been mad at somebody?
Yes.
I mean, all of us have. And have you ever noticed that the more angry you get with someone, especially when they're not even there, right?
Right.
Have you ever noticed the more angry you get with someone, the more pain you're in?
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Well, I'm kind of beating myself up in a sense because...
Yes, you are beating yourself up. And here's the point. When we think about someone who has hurt us,
mm-hmm.
the thought and the picture of the person that hurt us isn't the person that hurt us. It is a thought, an image in our own mind. But our sleeping, divided mind doesn't know that. And so when it attacks the picture and the image and the experience connected to that of a person in our mind, it is literally tearing into itself.
Mm-hmm.
And as the pain grows, the same mind believes the fact that the pain is growing proves that the person it's attacking really is responsible for that pain.
Right.
That's insanity.
Yes, it is.
All right, now, Jennifer, so do you agree with me? Here I am, and I'm angry as all get out at my mother. She died 20 years ago. My boyfriend who left me a week ago or who I think is cheating on me. You know, I'm angry, and I'm sitting there thinking about them, and the more I think about them, the more pain I'm in. Now, do you agree with me that as I think about that person that hurt me, it isn't the person I'm thinking about, it's the idea I have about that person and that I'm literally tearing into myself but not seeing it, yes or no?
Yes.
If I really see that, Jennifer, do I have to let go of something?
The anger, I would think. But...
No, Jennifer. The anger is a cycle being produced by a mind that is asleep to itself.
Right.
Producing a picture that it believes is different than... In other words, here I'm thinking about, let's take fear, because this is the same thing with fear.
Right.
Something happens and I start to be afraid. When I start to fear a moment, am I actually fearing the moment that just took place, or has my mind projected an image of what that moment means and what will happen to me as a result of the change?
Oh, projection.
It is a pure projection, isn't it?
Yes.
So the fear is definitely produced by negative imagination. My mind
yes.
creates an image of something that may take place as a result of this event. Now my mind begins to feel afraid of the picture it's looking at. But it made that picture, didn't it?
Yes.
So if my mind awakens, if I see, look, you know, I'm angry at this person, I don't know what to do about this resentment, I can't let it go, and then one day I see, my God, what I'm attacking here, the pain is not produced because of what this person did, but because I continue to revisit the image of what they did, and I continue to try to punish the person or escape the situation, and all I'm doing is attacking myself. And if I see that I'm attacking myself, I see that I'm frightening myself, I see that I'm stressing myself, if I really see that it is my own mind set against itself without knowing it, do I need a power in that moment? Do I need to think to myself, how do I set this down? Or in the discovery of the way in which the divided mind acts against itself, is it done all at once because I will not continue, I will not fuel the fires that are burning me up?
Yes, you just let it go.
That's it. And so there's no you that's letting go of anything.
Right.
Really what's happening is that there's a part of you that's discovered that you're as loony as a tune, that you have been asleep, that when you get mad at something that just happened, you're not getting mad at what just happened. You're mad because an expectation you had wasn't met. And so the anger is the product of the mind resisting the fact that its own expectation was crushed. Now it is pummeling itself, feeling the pain, but believing that the pain is the product of the picture that it imagines produced it. And it's all a dream.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's all part of a way in which this mind, asleep to itself, first produces this image, this hope, this expectation, this demand. And then when life doesn't meet it, that identity is suddenly thrown away, oh, what do I do? Oh, my God. And it starts to look at what it says is reality. The mm-hmm. mind that is afraid is not looking at reality. It is looking at what it says is real. And it begins to be afraid of what it sees, not knowing that what it sees is its own projection. The whole thing comes crashing down, Jennifer, once that becomes clear.
Yes, it does. So, with everything, well, you know, is with all the people out there with the law of attraction, and they're saying you ask for it, you put it in action, and you have an expectation. how would you tell them to deal with the expectation part?
Well, I think, you know, truthfully, I think that that's this whole business of the secret and the law of attraction and abundant living, it's a phase along the journey for people where they
right.
still believe somehow or other that getting money or people or power or approval, that it's going to make their life different. I tell you, without any doubt, it doesn't matter if you attract a gazillion dollars into your life, you'll just be a miserable gazillionaire,
right.
period. And the reason you'll be a miserable gazillionaire is because your nature hasn't changed. It's so unbelievable that on this planet we still believe that somehow or other changing our circumstances is the same as changing our consciousness. When we understand that we meet nothing other than what we are moment to moment, our real attention will be on what we are in the moment instead of trying to change the moments around us so that we have a different experience of ourselves. It's just a phase, this attraction secret business, and it'll pass as surely as all the other phases do when people finally realize, all right, you know what? A, it didn't work, or B, it did work, but I'm still working out how to get over my anger and fear. In fact, the thing that I thought would free me that I attracted into my life, I'm the slave of it now. This
right.
is the kind of discovery that gradually begins to liberate us from understanding that, all right, I always thought that this spiritual path and fulfillment, peace of mind, kindness, compassion, I thought these things had something to do with the way in which I think. No, they don't. They have everything to do with what we are aware of in the moment and what we attend to in that awareness. It is completely accurate to say that we value moment to moment what we do because we believe it will change us. When we realize, for instance, that when we're angry or frightened because someone or something has taken away what we value, that our anger is what we value in that moment, it won't be long before we start realizing, you know what? I thought the reason I was so upset was because something was taken from me. The real reason I'm upset is because I'm thrown back on myself and I have to see one more time that it doesn't matter what I bring into my life physically. What matters is how I change myself in the moment, what I attend to in myself. This is the real work, Jennifer.
So basically, that is very much like the Buddhist, of just letting the feeling, that thought, just flow through you and not attach or be very detached to the thought.
Well, you know, I'll try this with you. This is what I didn't quite get to it.
Okay.
Do you ever go to a river, Jennifer?
There isn't too many rivers in Tucson.
Yeah, I know.
At least that actually flow.
Have you ever been to a
dry one? But yes, I have been to a river.
And I think most of us have been to a river. Now, Jennifer, you help me, okay? Because this is a little subtle, but I think it's important. When we look at a river, do you know that you never see the same river twice?
Yes.
And we can use our minds and see that.
Yes.
The water never stops moving, does it?
No.
So here I am, but when I think about a river, I don't think to myself that a river per se doesn't really exist because it's never the same. So there is this idea called river, and there is a place where a river is, but the river itself is a constant flow that is always removing something and being replaced with something new. Yes?
Yes.
Jennifer, that's our true nature. That's what I really is in a human being, not what we are now, which is someone who has that thing, this job, this
right.
home, this respect, this power. We are presently beings that know ourselves through a static quantity. And the quantity that we know ourselves, Jennifer, isn't even through the thing itself. That's what I was alluding to. It's through the idea of the thing. Because if a thing in itself actually could give us security, if a person in itself could actually give us love, then we would have that security and love, and it wouldn't matter what happened to that person or thing, because we would have what we've imagined we do.
Right.
But we don't have that. And life is always trying to teach us that we don't have the thing that we think we do. So the real spiritual work, the real letting go, is gradually awakening to realize that my present order of self is something that knows itself through something, and that that's just a level of life, but not my true nature. My true nature is the river. It is always being fed by the divine. It is always being changed by the divine, and it is always being moved out by the divine, and there is no one really there by my name that is having that experience. And yet, in this world, there is a guy and a Jennifer that can look back and say, ah, look, that was a moment on the river.
Right.
See, is this too subtle? Because I think this is such an important idea.
It's actually brilliant. It really does. It is very simple, but at least for me, it makes it very clear that it's ever changing, even though we don't want it to change. It's going to change.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know,
we our true nature is change itself. It's awareness itself. Our true nature, and life is always trying to get us to let go of anything that clings to or refuses to be aware of that fact. And the pain never goes away. The lesson doesn't go away because the pain of it returns over and over again until finally we let go. And when we let go, Jennifer, do we lose ourselves?
Actually, gain ourselves.
Yes, exactly. And that's right out of Scripture. One must lose themselves in order to gain oneself.
Yes.
So, in a manner of speaking, here I am, and I'm trying to protect this moment by the river where you said you loved me, or I was a great athlete,
right,
or, you know, I achieved this thing when I was 20 or 30, or I had $1 million and now I'm a pauper, whatever it is. And our mind doesn't get that life is saying, look, I'm going to keep trying to push this through, you know, I'm going to keep bringing these new waters in to help you release yourself. And as we begin, because the pain finally makes us do it, and that's what I call a crisis. A crisis is a close encounter with the truthful kind. I can't fight with life anymore. It has brought me to the point where it is saying, let go or you're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally you let go. And you discover, much to your happiness, that it was the best thing that ever happened because you didn't let go of that person. You didn't let go of that situation. You had to let go of the part of you that was clinging to that person, that was dependent upon that drug or situation.
And people get very addicted to certain situations. And, you know, in a sense, in relationships, they will bring this, they might let go of one person, but they'll bring somebody else in that's identical. Might be slightly different, but you know the lesson's going to be the same. Because
the
they
lesson,
haven't really
right. and the lesson
let go
the
of
same.
The same thing. I mean, the same situation's going to keep coming and coming and coming until you truly get a clue of what's going on. And
that's
notice
right.
myself doing that, and it's like, okay, what's a deeper lesson? What part of this am I not getting yet? Let's see what, you know, and like I said, if something irritates me, I sit back and say, okay, what am I resisting? What isn't clear to me that I really need to be clear? Can you give me some clarity here? And and generally I do get to the point of just saying, all right, it doesn't affect me anymore. Bye-bye, it's down the river. The other thing I always say is think of things as like a bird flying by, because there's always going to be a different bird for the most part flying by in the sky, a different cloud.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, look, for instance, say take something from someone's past, something very painful in one's past.
Mm-hmm.
Someone really betrayed you, or you were abused. I mean, look, there's no question that terrible things have happened to all of us on this planet because a sleeping race of beings has to be mean. It hurts itself. Doesn't mean to do it. Doesn't know any better. But the pain takes place. Another example of letting go. If I am troubled by my past, am I willing to see that the only time I'm troubled by my past is when my mind, my own mind, revisits that moment? And when it revisits the moment, it brings the pain back into reality, and then the mind that has stirred the hornet's nest then gets out the baseball bat and tries to beat away the pain that was produced because it didn't know what it was doing to itself. An unattended mind is the breeding ground of defeat. An unattended mind is the breeding ground of defeat. I call it revisiting the scene of the crime.
Yes.
Reliving an argument with somebody and then getting mad at them and blaming them for the pain you're in. All that happened was that your mind, asleep to itself, simply brought up the picture, the pain, the problem, reinvigorated that feeling of being a victim, then starts to resist the victimized state that it awakened in itself, and then tries to figure out what to do with that circumstance, which creates a cycle in which the thing goes on and on, and all unnecessarily, if we could be awake in the moment. Bottom line here. Our problems as human beings have nothing to do with what others have done to us, but rather with what we are unaware of in ourselves in that moment. When we can choose to be aware of ourselves in the moment, as you were saying, then we'll realize that the reason that we have the ache we do is because something in us is bringing back that problem, revisiting that fear, rekindling that burning fire of anger. And all we have to do is simply see the truth of it, and then that's it. We're done. Because no human being will consciously compromise himself or herself.
Which brings up another point that I wanted to, when you figure it out, many people say you need to forgive yourself and the other person. Your thoughts on that. Is forgiveness a good healing part of this process of letting go?
Well, let's talk about that, shall we?
Okay.
I think, Jennifer, that when we talk about forgiving another person, that the only way we ever really forgive another person is when we realize that we are really not any different than the person that needs forgiveness.
Very true. So in a sense, are you saying that if you forgive yourself, you're forgiving the other person?
Yeah, we're touching on something very beautiful here. So let's look. Now, you just said so that when you forgive yourself, that you're forgiving the other person. That's right. In one respect, because when you stop judging yourself, then you also stop judging others. But
yes.
And we bring together what we were talking about just a moment ago, where, for instance, I'm very angry with you and have been for 20 years because of what you did.
Right.
And then one day I'm sitting there and I realize, you know what? What you did, look, you lashed out at me. And I can't forgive you for being that kind of person. And then one day I'm getting ready, and I'm doing something, and someone comes along, and I lash out at them, and I realize, because of doing my spiritual work, you know what? You're not the one who put that anger in me. You didn't make me lash at you. I had this pain. I had this attachment, this identity, and you did something that revealed to me that I was carrying this pressure. And then the pain lashes out, and I couldn't help myself. I didn't want to be that man who hurt you, but I couldn't stop it. And do you know that when we actually see that we can't help ourselves for being what we are, and we're not blaming others for what we have been, then how can we hold someone else responsible and hate them for what they have been when we see that they can't be any different than we are, and that we
right.
aren't any different than they are? Then this whole arrogant idea of I forgive you disappears. Instead, there is a compassion that's born, where I realize, you know what, you and I are in the same boat, and I'll no more hold your feet to the fire than I will hold my own feet to the fire, because it is not I who acts against myself. It is this level of self, it is this particular level of this mind, this divided mind, that always acts against itself. And it's in the discovery, we said that as we see that it is indeed me acting against myself that is the root of my resistance, my reaction, then I let it go. I can't cling to it. I can't hold on to it. And if I let go of that, Jennifer, I have to let go of anything and anyone that I believe caused me that same pain that now I understand has really been produced by a mind that's asleep to itself.
And with that, you know, we could have a whole another discussion, but our time is now out. It always goes so quickly with you, Guy. It's always great information, and I want everybody to go check out your website, guyfinley.com, or is it .org, or is it all of the above?
It's Guy Finley, F-I-N-L-E-Y, guyfinley.org. If you go to .com, you'll probably get there, but guyfinley.org. And Jennifer, as you know, there's months of free material. If you sign up for our newsletter, you get a free MP3, a free PDF of a book of mine, a host of free gifts that my foundation makes available to anyone that visits guyfinley.org.
And also, to remind people, you do have a 5-day workshop coming up at Omega. Is there still space available in that, do you know?
I do believe there is, Jennifer, and you can find out by going to my website. You can link through to Omega through guyfinley.org at the appearance section there, or just go to the Omega Institute. I don't know if it's omega.org or what, but find your way
in. I believe it is.
Yeah.
It's great information. I know the workshop is going to be tremendously helpful to many. You're always tremendously helpful to me, and believe me, you will be back on the show. I hope you will come back soon.
I enjoy speaking with you, Jennifer. Thank you.
Thank you. And with this, I thank the audience for listening. And until next time, with each breath of air, gain new insights and inspiration. Till then, many blessings and good night.